it's hard traveling. You're not out here making dozens of dollars. You're making like singles and stuff. And I'm exaggerating, but we wouldn't be able to keep doing it if we didn't make a little bit of money. But it's nothing crazy, you know. I'm not retiring off of it for sure.
Maybe one day, though.
I don't know. Like, I feel like that's just quitting at that point. Like, what's the point? You know, what's the point of working for something all your life just to get to a point where you stop doing it?
I'm Joni Deutsch, and from WFAE in Charlotte, this is Amplifier, the music podcast where we shine a light on the Charlotte music scene. Because Charlotte is more than just a banking city or a football city. So each weekday during the month of September, we're going to explore the people, places, and things that help define the Queen City's Crown Sound. And today, a Southern act who enjoys playing in a mountain music band as much as he does booking acts for his local music venue. That's coming up on Amplifier.
Amplifier. And then the beat will drop.
Amplifier.
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 Can you introduce yourself and what you do in the Charlotte music scene?
My name is Perry Fowler. I don't think I do anything in the scene. I'm just kind of a participant, which is, in all seriousness, I think this is kind of like what you need to be. You know, you can't just, if nobody knows about anything going on, if nobody's trying to put together anything or try to put any shows together, there's not going to be a scene. So you have to participate in it. So that's what I do. I just try to do my best to participate in the music scene.
So you are a participant in the Charlotte music scene, but Perry, I think that you do more than just being a participant. So you are a musician, and I'd love to get into how you started playing music.
Oh man, kind of by accident. Like, I always wanted to play music and play guitar and piano, and I took piano lessons for years and never really got good at it. I tried picking up my dad's guitar that he had laying around that he tried playing when I was little, and it was just a kind of a piece of crap. It wasn't playable, and so I didn't really start playing guitar until I moved out of my parents' house, and I had a roommate that was a really good guitar player, and he used to leave his sitting around, and he worked first shift and I worked third shift, so I would come home and his guitar would be sitting around, so I just picked it up and started learning songs.
Now, was this in Charlotte or were you elsewhere?
This was in Lancaster, South Carolina.
Really?
Yeah.
What was it like living in Lancaster?
I don't live there anymore.
What was it like at the time, though?
No, that's people that might be from Lancaster will hear that and say, oh, man, he's, you know, dogging on his hometown. It's not like Lancaster. There's a lot of really good musicians that come from Lancaster, and it's kind of cool to you know, travel somewhere or be somewhere and you know, meet people from Lancaster that play, and I'm like, holy crap, did we go to high school together? And a lot of times, no, they were in either a year or two below me or ahead of me or something, or in a different part of the county. But it's just crazy. There's this like little nest of really awesome musicians that come out of Lancaster. I don't know why.
So what was your first taste of the Charlotte music scene then? And when was that exactly?
Man, like I said, I was really late to the game in pretty much everything I've ever done in life. I saw my first real concert when I was like 18. It was a band called Athenaeum.
Nothing's even wrong, and you're ashamed, 'cause you're not quite that strong. That's when
they were playing at Tremont, but that was like my first ever concert, going to. And then I started going to more shows at like Fat City and the Milestone. Then I started going to the Visual Light and the Evening Muse, and you know, then other venues started popping up. Like, I really didn't come to Charlotte back in the heyday. If you talk to some true Charlatans that were born and raised here that might be my age or a little older, they can tell you way more about like what the scene was like, you know, even 15 years ago when I first moved to Charlotte, because I really didn't know what the scene was like. And when I'm living in a podunk town, you know, even 30 miles away, Charlotte just seemed like a big city, like way, way up there, you know. I really didn't know what to do in Charlotte or where to go.
When you started watching music in Charlotte and going to these concerts and these gigs, what inspired you then to be in a band? Start playing here yourself?
I didn't want to be in a band. I was too shy. No, for real. I've always just kind of kept to myself. You know, I was just really shy. I started playing with a guy from we went to high school together, but we weren't really friends until I moved out of my parents' house and I kind of moved into his neighborhood. We started, you know, learning some like covers and stuff, and I started learning how to book a gig and play open mics and stuff. And then, you know, that just kind of like petered out, and I started really trying to figure out what kind of music I like to play, and it's kind of, you know, folk music is what I like to play. It's not really what I listen to the most of, which is, you know, surprises some people. Like, we were on tour just a couple weeks ago, and we were in New Mexico, and this guy was like asking me, he's like, "Where are you from?" And we're like, "North Carolina." He's like, "Oh, well, you must know such and such." And I'm like, "No." He's like, "Well, surely you know this person." And I'm like, "No, I've never heard of him." And then like, "Oh man, kids today don't know the shoulders of the legends that they stand upon." And I'm like, "Look, dude, I can tell you five names of people that I'm in love with, and you may have never heard. That doesn't mean that you know less about music than I do." So he shut up, and then he listened to us play, and he invited us over for some smokes later. So I don't know my point there. There's no one way to do it or, you know, appreciate it. It's just, I guess that's what I was talking about. Sorry. Yeah, I didn't really listen to a lot of the style of music that I play. It sounds natural to me because I'm pretty country when I talk. So it would be weird if I were to sing like R&B or punk rock or anything like that. I don't know. I feel like I'm a country sounding dude. So I just, songs come out of me in a country like fashion.
The band that you're referring to, that you're on tour with, is Sinners and Saints. And mm-hmm. The sound of the band I've seen described as Americana, folk, country.
I say it again, and my only friend is the bottle. Places I've gone, faces I've wronged, are all I can see. But God only knows which way the wind blows tomorrow. You're up like the sun, and I am the rain.
So can you tell us how did the band form?
Yeah, I was playing solo at the time, and I was I had a show at Snug Harbor, and this guy who was playing stand-up in another band that I didn't really know him all that well, but I knew people in his band, you know, fairly well. So I'd met him before, and so they were at my show, and he come up to me later. He's like, "Hey, man, if you ever want a bass player, you know, just hit me up." And I remembered the first time I saw his band play, and I'm like, "Man, if I ever had a bass player, it would be that guy." But, you know, like I said, I'm shy, and I'm really, you know, kind of self-conscious about sharing my songs to people because I'm not the greatest musician. So in my mind, I felt like if I played with somebody who was a good musician, they would get tired of it after a while. But it's been almost 8 years now. He hadn't gotten tired yet. His name's Mark Barron, by the way. he's not just some random guy I met on Grindr.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about the band, because like I said before, it is not a sound that what you like I said before, the sound of this band, Sinners and Saints, is very country. It is very almost like a southern drawl of sorts. So what influenced the sound of this band?
Honestly, I played a show with this band from Westchester, Pennsylvania, about 10 years ago, I guess, maybe, at what used to be called SKNet Cafe. Now they turned to Crown Station, and they closed down. Now Crown Station reopened somewhere in Noda. But I played a show with this band called Hoots and Hellmouth. And I was already kind of playing a little more folksy stuff. And I saw them play and just blew my mind. I'm like, how are these people making these songs that sound like you want to get on the back of a train car and just ride? And I'm not one of those train kids at all, but like it makes you feel like that freedom that you get, you know, I guess, or that you're chasing when you think about things like that, just riding across the country.
I've built such a fanciful kingdom in my head. Say you don't, you won't go there. Why would you not wanna go there? Why would you not wanna go there?
And their voices were so powerful and strong and melodic, and that was really the first band that got me into wanting to do kind of what I wanted it sound like, which is kind of myself, you know. When I stopped trying to write songs like, you know, I used to try to rap and stuff, and
really,
yeah. And I'm like, I mean, I'm not a rapper. I mean, that's like, you talk about cultural appropriation. I mean, that's just like the epitome. Like, I mean, I love hip hop, but that doesn't make me a rapper just because I can throw some bars together, you know? So I just started, you know, writing what was natural, felt more natural to me, I guess.
So with Sinners and Saints, you all released a sophomore LP full length around spring of last year. It's titled On the Other Side.
I can promise you no secrets. I can promise you more flowers. And I can promise I'll be here when you come home. And I can promise you no crying. And I can promise you more laughter. And I can promise you more reasons to come home. There's a promised land I'm sure of, where the ocean meets.
On the Other Side, the title came about, it's a line from a song on the album, and it's just kind of like, you know, on the other side is like, it's like the goal, like it's kind of like this unseen, unspoken goal, like if you can make it through this, you'll get to the other side of it. And that's just kind of how we approach the band. If we can make it through this tour, then we've succeeded in that aspect, and we can move on to the next tour or even just a show. I mean, it's really hard to be in a band. You know, we're only a two-piece, and it's fairly easy for us compared to other bands that might have three members even, or a five-piece or a six-piece, if there's even a reason for you to have a six-piece band. I don't understand why, but some people do, and that's fine, you know, but this is hard with schedules, and it's hard traveling. You're not out here making dozens of dollars. You're making like singles and stuff. And I'm exaggerating, but we wouldn't be able to keep doing it if we didn't make a little bit of money. But it's nothing crazy, you know. I'm not retiring off of it for sure.
Maybe one day, though.
I don't know. Like, I feel like that's just quitting at that point. Like, what's the point? You know, what's the point of working for something all your life just to get to a point to where you stop doing it?
Coming up, Perry Fowler on owning one of Charlotte's favorite music venues and tips on how your favorite act can get booked there. That's right after this break on Amplify. Hey, Amplifier listeners. We're learning a lot about the Charlotte music scene, but if you're looking for even more stories and songs, make sure to head to wfae.org/amplifier. There, you can listen to our nearly 3-hour-long Charlotte music playlist and scroll through a Charlotte music map of all the locations you can find live music in the Queen City. There's a ton to do on our website, including a way to submit your own music if you're a Charlotte artist. So make sure to go to wfae.org/amplifier. Speaking of which, let's get back to our interview. So Perry, we've talked a bit about your own music career, but I think what I found really interesting about you, besides the great music you produce, is also that you are a co-owner of a Charlotte music venue that really does support the Charlotte music scene, and the venue's called Petra's. And I'd love to know more about how you came into becoming a co-owner and a manager of this venue.
Man, like most great things in life, it was totally accidental. I was looking for some part-time work about 4 years ago, and we had played Petra's several times, and it's such a cool vibe, and I was new to the bar scene. I worked in restaurants, or actually only one restaurant, but you know, I'd been a server for about 8 years, and I'm like, I can start making drinks, I think, and I think I'd be pretty good at it. And so I started working the door there about 4 years ago. Then they started, a few months later, they started training me to be a bartender. A few months later, they made me bar manager. A few months after that, they asked if one guy, Jerry Brown, he's no longer with us. He passed away last August. And he was such an incredible guy. He's the one that opened Petra's. And he just asked me, he's like, Perry, do you want some skin in the game? And I thought about it, and I was like, man, I was like, is that going to affect my touring? And because that was the caveat for every position I took there, was that I could be allowed to travel and keep making progress with what me and Mark are doing. And he said, yeah, totally. Several months after that, he passed away. It's the craziest thing, set of circumstances ever. So it's still kind of weird to think about, you know, being an owner of a place that I, you know, didn't really open up. It wasn't my vision, you know, but over the years, my wife and I, who's also a partner, we've kind of turned it into our vision, you know. And it's gone through a lot of changes. When it first opened up, it was Petra's Piano Bar, and it was strictly a gay bar. Strictly sounds harsh. It wasn't, like, not open, but a lot of people are scared of what they don't know, and there's been a lot of changes, societal changes lately, that's helped people come around to being more open, or not even being open. I think people are more open than you think they are, but some people are scared of how they're going to be perceived, you know. So it was we made a concerted effort to make sure that people are welcome there, no matter what their sexuality is, whatever their preference is, whatever their perceived gender role is, just to make it an open space for people, for artists, creatives, patrons, drinkers, non-drinkers, you know, and that's hard to do. It's hard to be an umbrella bar. You know, most people have their shtick and they stick with it, and that's what keeps them open. But we try to incorporate everybody, you know.
How did your experience as a musician inform the way that Petras works now?
Oh, man, greatly, because I know what a good deal is and I know what a bad deal is. So I try to keep that in mind. I know there's really no money to be made in music. Like, and what I mean by that is, as a performer, if you're doing it for the money, you're gonna quit, because there's not any early financial gain, if any ever. And the same with producing music, either as a producer, if you're, you know, helping someone else make music, or you're producing shows or promoting shows, there's really not money in it. Same as playing music. If you're in it for the money, you're going to be out of it really quick. So you just have to be in it to be a participant and to provide a safe space and a good space and a place that, you know, just treats people right, no matter if they're walking through the door or if they're standing on the stage or if they're working behind the bar. Just be a good space and all the rest of the things still fall in place.
What are some highlights of Petra's venue history since you've been there?
Oh, man. Yeah, one of them that right off the top of my head, it was a show that I was involved with. There's some friends of mine from Florida. They're in a band called Everyman, and they're kind of like a, I don't know, gypsy hobo punk, kind of how they describe themselves. They play punk music with acoustic instruments. But they're crazy in the best way. They're like so fun, and they're so energetic, and they're just good people. And so we met them a while back ago. But anyway, we played a show with them, and they were on tour with a band called Mischief Brew. They were out of Philadelphia, and a band called Dollar Signs from Charlotte. And I'd never seen that many people there for a live music show. We've had dance parties that there's been that many people there, but I think there were like 180 paid that night, and we're only 120 cap. You know, it was just insane, and that's when I've understood completely like what this place could be with just a little bit of attention and heart. But other than that, Capadonna performed there. From Wu-Tang Clan, that was pretty special. There's a band that I'm actually friends with. They played there a few years ago. They're called Cicada Rhythm. It's beautiful harmonies, and the girl in the band, Andrea, who plays stand up bass, she's like Juilliard trained, and she's just got perfect pitch, and it's annoying because I don't have perfect pitch, but it's nice to see people who do have perfect pitch. And her now fiance David, he's just a funny, goofy guy, but he's an awesome guitar player and is a really good songwriter in his own right too. So I like playing shows with them, and when they play Petras, it's always like man, this room sounds good, but it's them that sounds good. But
so it sounds like you're discovering a lot of great music along the way, some new friends, some new favorites. I'm sure that there are a number of listeners, not to mention artists, that are listening to this interview, and they're wondering, how do you, Perry, how does Petras scout for talent? I mean, how can someone get booked at Petras?
Follow the procedures on the website. it's annoying when they don't. And
so for those not on the website, like, can you tell us what the procedures are?
Yeah, well, actually, I kind of messed up because our website's down. But
so what you're saying is you don't want any live music there right now.
No. There's petrasbooking@gmail.com is the avenue to get in touch with us. Like anything in life, you just have to be patient. Like I can't respond to everyone in as timely of a fashion as I would like to. Booking in itself is so hard, and I book all my, you know, all the Sinners and Saints tours, and we stay pretty busy too. It's hard for me to get to everyone, but I try to, unless it's just like a lame email. I'm not afraid of calling people out. You know, it's just like, have some etiquette in your email. Like, even though there might not be much money involved, this is a business. Unless you're playing on the side of your bed or on your couch or in your garage, the minute you step out of your house, it becomes a business, whether you want it to or not. So treat it like a business and have some courtesy and etiquette in your email, and don't just say like, hey, we're looking for a show and I don't know who you are. I don't know what you sound like. Not that it matters what you look like, but I don't know anything. There's no picture. I don't know anything about you. And don't hit me up 2 days later and say, what's up? There's nothing up. I'm not responding to you. I have too many other emails that have important content and content that I need and that I want to know about to respond to those, to respond to your cat call.
So for those that are going to now just make your inbox explode with these emails, since you provided the email address.
Yeah, bring it on. We need good music.
How can they construct the best pitch for you? What do you need as a booker to know what they do, how they sound, and whether you should book them or not?
Short and sweet, to be honest. But, you know, keep in mind, like, not like just, hey, we're looking for a show, short and sweet. Hey, my name is yada, yada, yada. I perform this kind of music, or I'm with this band that performs this kind of music. We're looking for a show on this date or these dates around this date. You can hear us at this link. You know, give me a Bandcamp link or some link. Don't send me to a Facebook page that doesn't have music. And if you don't have music, that's fine too. If you're a new band, I get it. Like, not everybody can afford to record, but you just give me something. You know, give me some kind of info. If you don't have any links to your music, say like where you played in Charlotte or who you played with or who you're friends with or how might I know you that I can take a chance on you. And be open to playing a weekday show too. Like, there's only so many Fridays and Saturdays in a month. Not everybody can play a Friday and Saturday. Sometimes you got to play a Tuesday or a Thursday. Or we have shows on Sundays sometimes too. Even Mondays. I mean, we have shows kind of when I can fit them in all throughout the week.
How does a social media following or Spotify spins play a role in booking talent? Is it more important for the artist to have thousands of Facebook followers or that they have 10,000 spins on Spotify? Is there a stat that you're looking for, if anything?
Not really a stat. I do understand its importance, but a lot of times those numbers can be misleading. And I've kind of started to figure out how to find a genuine stat. Like if I go on a band's Facebook page and I see they're from Charlotte, you know, or somewhere surrounding, and they have like 5,000 likes, I'm like, whoa. And then I look at the common likes, you know, like there might be one or no people. I know they bought those likes, which happens a lot, because they're trying to pad their stats, so
yeah,
to speak.
So that they look popular, so that when you're looking at their Facebook profile, you're thinking, oh, they have 5,000 followers. That means that, you know, a quarter of them could maybe come to this venue and sell it out.
Exactly.
But that's probably not the case if they're buying those likes or those
exactly.
followers.
But there's a way that if you look at where their likes are, it shows you underneath how many of your friends like them. And so if I see a band with 5,000 likes and 20 of my friends like them, like you said, about roughly a quarter, I'm like, oh, wow, this band is really popular. So I'm going to book them, even if I haven't heard of them before. And if I like the music too, I mean, there's that. It's a tough balance. It is a business. It's not always booking the music that you like, as much as that sucks to say and admit. Sometimes it's booking a show that is out of necessity sometimes. Like, sometimes I'm like, man, I really need to fill this night. It's, you know, it's only 4 weeks away. I need time to promote it, and I need a band. This band hit me up at just the right time, so they're getting a gig. You know, there's that. And also just being open to, like, giving bands a shot, too. Like, a local band that hasn't been playing out much or has never played a show, you can't start playing shows until you start playing shows. So that would be silly of me to deny a band from playing if just because they haven't ever played a show before.
Yeah, because it's that age old, like, you need experience to get experience. But how can you get experience if they see you don't have experience? Like, it just goes back and forth.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm wondering, how important is the Charlotte or regional music scene to Petra's? What is Petra's role in it?
We're community first. You can't, you know, pound your chest and tout yourself as this community establishment if you're not allowing local bands to come in and showcase what the Charlotte music scene could be. I'm not saying it's there yet, but I've traveled around and Charlotte's got a pretty good thing going on.
I don't want to go back home. Ain't nothing there for me. I want to stay on the road all day and play all my songs for free. And if I should earn some pay, I'll earn it honestly. And that's what it takes to stay on the road and play all your songs for free. Make them sing out loud and make them feel it down in their bones. Gotta make them cry, make them dance like they're the only ones who came to your show. And if you need my advice, you might get out alive on the other side.
Harry Fowler is the co-owner of Petra's live and local music venue in Charlotte, which you can find on facebook.com/Petra's Bar. Perry is also in the band Sinners and Saints, whose latest release is titled On the Other Side, available on sinnersandsaintsmusic.com and wherever fine music is streamed and sold. Amplifier is a production of WFAE. This episode was written and produced by me, Joni Deutsch. Our associate producer is Cole Del Charco. Our editors are Greg Collard and Jadon Marshall. Our theme music is provided by Dirty Art Club. You can share your favorite Charlotte music recommendations right now on social media. Just follow and tag me. I'm at A Change of Tune. New episodes of Amplifier drop each weekday this September, so make sure to subscribe to the Amplifier podcast on Apple Podcasts, NPR One, and wherever you find podcasts. For more Charlotte music chats, including playlists and even a Charlotte music map, visit wfae.org/amplifier. Until next time, I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening.